paper 23, section 3, which is old single column, page 260. Let's see. If you recall, we were, you know, getting rolling on the solitary messengers. Probably the only thing that we need to definitively put back in the front of your mind is that overarching fact we kept emphasizing. So much of the various attributes of the solitary messengers can be understood if you remind yourself of that one key fact about their nature. They're very transcendent. They are functioning in the finite, but just barely. Ceiling dwellers, you know, as it were. Okay. Okay. So that distinct transcendent, you know, aspect, you know, comes into play a lot. So you read something, you go, I wonder why that is. Try that. That's, you know, it's a pretty good rule of thumb that once you figure out the basic elements of the nature of a being or a particular aspect of the cosmos or whatever, you know, if you're trying to understand something that's going on relative to that being or in that domain of the cosmos, and you ask that why question, you know, go back to sort of primary aspect of their nature, secondary aspect of their nature. You know, just query yourself and see if that's, if you can, of course, that's why it is. Try to get that process of personal recognition going that you're looking for so that you have a personal relationship with the revelation, because only in a personal relationship will you experience the truth. You can't just have an actual relationship. Yeah?
I just had to say this right here. Based on what you're saying, the solitary messenger who wrote the thought adjuster papers talks a lot about himself and the solitary messengers in those papers. So that's another way to like get a second perspective. Sure. About the solitary messengers. Yeah.
Sort of
to read those little thought adjuster papers.
Yeah.
That's one of the reasons I love them so much.
Yeah. I think so too.
Get a little better, you know, sense of day in a life of sort of thing. I think, you know, I heard Chris, you know, just mention there something that, you know, and remember too that their natural state is, you know, is very much up there, cruising along the ceiling. And they have to unplug to a large degree to come into engagement with other individuals. And so when you hear them speaking of, you know, how they're approaching things, how they're interacting, whatnot in a group context, you know, you're getting a little sense of what they're like when they aren't so solitary. Obviously, when they're solitary, they're pretty quiet. And very unapproachable, very, you know, mysterious. Okay, so with that in mind, let's talk a little bit about that relationship to finite space and time. What does it look like, more specifically?
Section 3, Time and Space Services of Solitary Messengers. The solitary messengers are the highest type of perfect and confidential personality available in all realms for the quick transmission of important and urgent messages when it is inexpedient to utilize either the broadcast service or the reflectivity mechanism. They serve in an endless variety of assignments, helping out the spiritual and material beings of the realms, particularly where the element of time is involved. Of all orders assigned to the services of the superuniverse domains, they are the highest and most versatile personalized beings who can come so near to defying time and space.
So just to remind yourself again, I mean, the We've brought this up a number of times, you know, long before we got to this paper. That whole issue of what exactly is personality again? How am I supposed to understand it as different than self? You know, just reflect on this. I mean, you're not going to get an immediate aha, but it's a touchstone that you can just keep coming back to. If you can imagine taking, you know, the kind of communication mechanisms that we have, and you know, extrapolating that as much as you can imagine, to imagine, you know, to try to get some sense of what kind of capabilities the, you know, the broadcast mechanism has, or even the reflectivity mechanism, and you can say, okay, well, I could certainly convey what I want to convey over that. As a matter of fact, I can do it on the telephone here on Earth, what I want to convey. Well, then that's not personal. If you can convey it over some sort of communication mechanism, no matter how sophisticated, even reflectivity, it's not personal. It's just fancy self. Use that as a challenge. It's like, wow, so what on earth is personality? That's the overriding question you just want to always have in your mind. Is this ever dawning recognition that you really don't know what personality is? None of us do. That's one of those big challenges they're trying to put in front of us. And to give you little points like this that provide a really stark contrast. You know, just keep that thought present in your mind and just keep working on it. And see if you can begin to find something that is way higher than what you ever thought was within you, in terms of individual expression ability, individual relationship ability. Why does it say that we know almost nothing of happiness? Because happiness is fundamentally a sixth level of meaning, you know, in the true meaning of that word. It's fully predicated on full personal quality in order to achieve this thing called happiness. It's purely a choice. So you can't even do it without a personality. You can decide with your mind until you're blue in your face and you're not capable of happiness. It doesn't come from a decision. It doesn't come from an experience directly. It results from a choice. It results from the kind of thing that you can't, that you can do in with yourself that you can't convey over a communication mechanism, no matter how sophisticated.
I was struck by the word confidential personality.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Because it implies the ability to be entrusted with a secret, or with, in other words,
or with a message that must be conveyed integrously.
Right. But not necessarily spread to the, the universe. It's just for the person intended.
Right. I mean, if you're getting a message to an Ancient of Days, Lucifer doesn't have privy to that, you know. he hasn't earned the right to have privy to that.
That's something that I'm often challenged with, is that, well, say I'm in a exchange with one person, and I think, boy, that's pretty cool. I'd like to share that with other people. But then I think, well, that was a personal exchange. Right. Do I have the right to share that with other people without that person's permission?
Yeah, and so certainly, you know, in the context of the cosmos, like we've talked about, you know, it's a statement that invokes a lot of reflection, because we know that by and large minds are open books.
Right.
Okay. So, you know, you know, you have to be cautious about the equivalence between, you know, saying that there's a, you know, it's confidential or there's a confidence in play and that it's secret, you know. I mean, that could certainly be an element, but it can also be, like I was saying, I mean, in the same way that it takes a very special, particular means to be able to get 2,000 pages of integrity in my lap, you can't just do that any old way. It'll get muddled. You can't send a message, a personal message from the ancients of days, you know, in just any old way. It'll get muddled. And also, you don't want, you know, the very fact that it's personal, that there's a definitive element of personality involved in the communication. There's will, free will involved. And so there's absolute distorting potential in play. Okay, so that's, you have to have a will creature that has, you know, full mastery over themselves, you know, so that, you know, as an element of the message that they're conveying, it is my will that your will be conveyed through this message, and none of my will is being imposed upon it. So, yep. All right. Let's see. Was there? Yeah. Oh well. Maybe just, you know, as I glance down at that. Yeah. You notice that they said perfect and confidential. So that. But it, you know, maybe just reflecting it, it doesn't say complete. It just says perfect. You know, I mean, you're not going to try to convey everything. So you just need the perfection of grasp on whatever little nugget is being conveyed. They don't necessarily have to have some huge reach of perfection. But all right. Let's see. You know, they'll just, I won't comment, you know, there, many, many times as we go forward, you'll see they just keep reiterating how extremely important these solitary messages are. Just, you know, note how often the Divine Counselor is going to repeat that. I mean, did I mention that they're really important to us? Oh, by the way, they're very significant. And he just keeps saying it over and over again. So that's, it's, they're just completely indispensable to the management of this vast domain, you know, that is a super universe. All right.
The universe is well supplied with spirits who utilize gravity for purposes of transit. They can go anywhere, anytime, instanter, but they are not persons. Certain other gravity traversers are personal beings, such as gravity messengers and transcendental recorders, but they are not available to the super and the local universe administrators. The worlds teem with angels and men and other highly personal beings, but they are handicapped by time and space. The limit of velocity for most non-seraphim beings is 186,280 miles of your world per second of your time. The midway creatures and certain others can and often do attain double velocity, 372,560 miles per second, while the seraphim and others can traverse space at triple velocity, about 558,840 miles per second. There are, however, no transit or messenger personalities who function between the instantaneous velocities of the gravity traversers and the comparatively slow speeds of the seraphim, except the solitary messengers.
Okay, there's a whole bunch of little things there, so let's just take them one at a time. Let's just do that last little tidbit. Who wrote this paper? A divine counselor. And we talked about, remember, the divine counselor can go a lot faster than three times the speed of light. And they can, those kind of Trinity origin beings can go very, very fast, almost as, you know, up there in the range of solitary messengers. So, see, when they say, there are, however, no transit or messenger personalities, well, there are beings that are in between three times the speed of light and solitary messengers. For instance, the author, okay, is between. But he's not a transit or messenger personality, okay? He's not going to be tasked with just, I need someone who can transit point A to point B. I mean, that's just, he doesn't do that type of duty. It's not because it's beneath him. It says everyone has a very definitive task, and they have their hands totally full. They're made for a very particular part of the picture, and that's all they do. You know, it's a rare individual that's very broad in their scope. Okay, so even though, yeah, he can go in between those two, he can't be employed for this task because he has other tasks. A similar thing is, you have gravity messengers and transcendental recorders that can take something from point A to point B, instantaneously even, but they are not available to the super and local universe administrators. Okay, put that in your own individual context. Gravity messengers, who remembers, who do the gravity messengers serve? And only. Finaliters. I gave you a clue. Put it in your own individual context. Gravity messengers only. And only the core of the mortal finality. Not even the other six cores of finaliters. Okay. So, you're standing there next to the Ancient of Days one day in the future, and the Ancient of Days would really love to get a message really fast. And you're standing there with your gravity messenger. You could get the message there instantly, but no, that's my gravity messenger. That's not yours. Okay. I mean, that's the kind of, I mean, you know, literally, the Ancient of Days can't use your messengers. They're God, high God. Your messengers are off limits to them. That's another key thing. I mean, things are very definitive. Now you can say, well, why not? Well, obviously I can't answer with any specificity. What do I know of such things? But I do know one overarching fact. We've touched upon it a number of times in this paper already. I'm sure that one of the reasons that you can't have a Ancient of Days using a gravity messenger because that would short-circuit the evolutionary domain in some way. Okay. You, up there closer to the ceiling, you know, where you're actually doing things, not just transiting, but you're working on things up there, you can have a being that is up there. You know, and a gravity messenger, you can really think they're in the ceiling. They're at the supreme level. And maybe I should just remind you what, remember, a gravity messenger is an adjuster that the Father modifies in some unspecified way and then personalized. So it's not like a personalized adjuster where it's just getting personalized and functions as this omnipersonal agent of the Father being modified. Well, you can kind of guess one of the modifications must be bringing it down and putting it in the supreme level, whereas those just personalized adjusters are, you know, completely up there, you know, co-infinite stuff. Okay. So that must be one of the modifications is, you know, downstepping and locking it at a given level, sort of just immediately, you know, when you reach up as a finaliter, you touch it. You know, it's just immediately above you. But you know, there it is. I mean, there you will have access to that incredible instanter message service, but not the Ancients of Days. They're not Michael. You say, sorry, Michael. Those are mine. I mean, that's the kind of thing that's going on. So, you know, you're functioning, you know, just the fact that you're interacting with the Ancients of Days like that shows you at what a high level you'll be functioning as a finaliter. You're rubbing elbows with the gods. And then, of course, the transcendental recorders, or transcendentalers, they're, you know, they're working for the master architects or whatnot, you know. Okay, so they're, you know, they're fully absentite, you know, individuals doing whatever.
Finaliters have some velocity.
Yeah, see, you know, you can suspect that a finaliter probably has a velocity like a divine counselor.
Yeah.
Because, again, why does a divine counselor have that holistic relationship with everything that allows him to have this incredible velocity? It's because he's Trinity origin. As a finaliter, what have we been emphasizing, you know?
Trinity origin.
Yeah, Trinity origin, facts. So you're probably in the same speed league as those Trinity origin beings.
So they're able to just think themselves to that velocity to just...
We don't. This is a point of speculation, and I'll come to that in a little bit. They don't give you any clues about that, if the mechanics of it. You know, other than that, you know, it obviously has to involve, you know, a very unfettered access to the whole, so that you're, you know, almost transcending it. You know, you can't just be grabbing a part, because then all you can do is just grab the part next to it and move to that.
But if you're gonna here to the moon in a half a second,
right? You know, you got to be kind of able to grab big chunks at a time. You know, yeah, you got to be quite transcendent.
Chris, before you go on, I'm just trying to wonder from a perspective point of view. You may know this from your science background. How fast do we send messages on Earth today? In other words, how fast does the...
Well, I mean, if you've got an optical fiber feeding your cable TV into your house, you're sending it to, you know, basically the speed of light.
186,000. Not more than the speed of light.
Right. Okay, yeah, and...
I'm just curious.
Yeah, and so, yeah, let's just talk about that. I mean, that just segues right into this next thing. So the limit of velocity for most non-seraphim beings is the speed of light. Okay. Just simply because the speed of light represents the foundation of the finite. Everything is, you know, that's where the finite starts, at unit speed, and everything that we experience as a finite being, whether it's literally we in the room of mortals, or you know, a seraphim or a Melchizedek or a divine counselor or whatever, okay, you know, is slowed down from that speed of light. The finite, the literally finite aspect. Now, if you're a divine counselor, like we were saying, you obviously have some transfinite things going on. But what they're saying there, if you're in terms of your basic nature, not some higher reach of your mind, perhaps, but just your basic energy nature. If that is a finite fact, then it's purely relative to the structure of the finite, which, you know, if you look at, instead of slowing down from unit speed, if you flip it around like we normally do, you're not going to go faster than that. If you did go faster than that, you would definite yourself. You would completely cease to exist as a finite fact. You go back into the foundation and disappear, because you were drawn up out of that unit velocity as a foundation, so you can't go past it. And so it's like saying you can't go to 91 degrees north. There just is no such thing. It seems arbitrary when you just call it 186,280. It's like, well, why not 81? Yeah. But if you call it one, you know, then it's more definitive. You know that you can, if you actually get to that, you go back into the unity. You cease to be an individuality. You'll de-individuate. Okay? And so you can't, no creature that's totally limited to the finite or anything that you're going to do can get all the way to unit velocity. Can get close. And so it's like, well, what about a photon? A photon goes at the speed of light. Oh. So in other words, that must have some element of transfinite nature, or it couldn't actually be at that unit. And we've talked about that. I mean, that, when you see a photon move at the speed of light, quote unquote, or anything, an automaton or whatever that's going to move at the speed of light, that's just the motion of the force charge. It's just like a marker dot on the force charge. That unit velocity is the, or that unit speed, I should say, is the motion of the force charge, that foundation of the finite that everything is slowed down from, drawn up out of, individuated out of. What's that first, the first individuation out of the continuum of the force charge is called an automaton, yeah? See, like I was saying, and you can't de-individuate an automaton by any finite process. Like I said, it would go back into unity, it definites itself. In that case, you imagine it blending back into an absonite foundation. It ceases to be a finite thing. Okay? Okay, so that's, so a non-transport seraphim is limited to the laws of the finite. You could imagine him building some contrivance or something, but he's not going to go faster than the speed of light in it.
That's what it says here, isn't it? Seraphim and other creatures of space?
But we haven't gotten to that. I mean, it's very important. Just a non-transport seraphim. Remember, you have transport seraphim and then you have all the other seraphim. They're not interchangeable. Transport seraphim are a very special flavor of seraphim that have a deep secret involved in them. One of those secrets of the Father's world, remember? Most of the universe has no idea how that transport seraphim can do what it can do, whereas a run-of-the-mill seraphim or supernaphim or whatever can't.
Are you sure about that?
Yeah.
Well, it says the midriff creature can go twice as speed of light, and then it goes on to say right here that the seraphim can go 550.
Right.
That's a nod.
Yeah, right, but we don't want to get off into all the other things in the book.
I was just thinking that was so interesting.
That demonstrate that, but if you look really carefully, there's a couple places in the book where they try to get you to recognize that in the same way that a Melchizedek can't transport itself, it has to be transported by a transport seraphim. Your guardian angels have to be transported. I mean, for instance, remember when they describe, it's a process where the guardian seraphim is going to say, "Take your soul to the first mansion world." I mean, the guardian seraphim doesn't just, start flapping its wings and go over to Jerusalem. It has to get into a transport seraphim and be transported. It can't transport itself. Okay. But anyway, we're getting there. Okay. Right now, I'm just trying to point out, we're not talking about actually any transport beings yet. These first two, they're just talking about the nature of the energy system. Okay, so if you have a full relationship to the finite, you're limited to the speed of light. If you have half the relationship to the finite, that something that has a full relationship does, you're midway, then your effective speed is twice the speed of light. Okay, and technically the way that works is an energy factor. Now we're not talking about how these beings could be transported at that speed yet. We're just talking about you could transport them, with some Starship Enterprise, some sort of conveyance that was like them, and it wouldn't de-individuate by having an effective speed greater than the speed of light. But See, actually, you have to think about it very precisely. And this is, again, another spot of the book where they go into some of these details. But you actually have two parts to the being. You have half of it, as it were, that is fully in the finite. And actually can't get quite up. That part can't quite get to the speed of light. The other half is not limited by the finite. It's transfinite. And it can go exactly one unit of speed in that, you know, what you're really working with is three absentite dimensions and wondering whether or not that, which ones of those absentite dimensions are projected down in the finite and hence locked into it and subject to the finite laws, and which ones are still transcended so that it can have a full unit in them. And so you have one plus almost one to get two, quote unquote. Same way with three. You have one, full one, another one, full one, and then an almost one. You've got the one that is locked down in the finite that has a relationship to the finite so that it even makes sense to talk about it going from point A to point B in the finite and not just being everywhere simultaneously because it's fully transcendent. Okay, the mystery is the physics of it, is how you have three independent absentite dimensions that you can think of as a Cartesian coordinate system. And it's like, well, those don't add together. They're at right angles to each other. How can I think of adding them together and getting three? That has to do, you have to remind yourself that each dimension of a transfinite dimension, you know, the x-axis in the absentite projects onto every axis in the finite, and so does the y, and so does the z. Okay, so they can be brought together. I obviously can't write the equation down for you, but you know, philosophically, that's how you understand how this could possibly happen. So it's not a literal three times the speed of light speed within the finite. That's impossible. Nothing can go back faster than the speed of light fully in the finite. It's transcending the finite to quite a bit of a degree. And it's more like you're clocking how fast the shadow moves through the finite. But the thing is really mostly transfinite. You know, so it's pulling itself out, riding above the finite and pulling it and then dropping back in. At point B is more like, you know, kind of, you know, in the way we imagine, you know, wormhole sort of stuff, only not literally like that, you know, but that's sort of, you know, bridging the gap between point A and point B without having to be fully constrained by the laws of the finite physics at every point in between. You're just constrained one third. And so you have an effective speed of three times the speed of light. Okay, so now in that case, okay, you're talking about those transport beings that have that effective speed. And another part of the mystery of transport seraphim is, if I'm a Marantia being, I can get inside of a transport seraphim and I can be transported at effectively three times the speed of light. You know, something that is not inherent in my nature. You know, I'm still very limited. See, there's deep, deep mystery in how it is that this being can just do it, and then how it can engage in another energy form, another being, and allow it to do it too. It's somehow, see, it's got to be, I mean, you got to imagine it's in a sense sort of going in and wrapping itself around every automaton or something, or every element of energy or something within it. It's like you're being absorbed into it.
They use the word in some embrace. Way.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you have to use embrace. But see, you got to imagine it's a little bit more than just grabbing you around the circumference. Right. See, yeah, this embrace. This is like seriously intimate embrace. Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
You're separate. You're decoupled.
Right. You know, you're becoming it for a while, and then it, you know, it oozes you back out.
Yeah.
Right, it's a very mysterious phenomenon.
Part transporter, actually.
Yeah. It's more than warp speed. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I've read this thing probably, you know, 100 times over the last 30 years, and I've always thought that it meant that midway creatures can go maybe twice the speed of light. And I said in my mind, well, that means that makes it so that they can be almost be in two places at the same time. And I thought to myself, what about angels? Gee, they can go that fast. And I can understand how a guardian angel who maybe has 100 people that is guardian angel for can be in touch with all those people almost simultaneously because you can move that fast.
No, you don't. I mean, it doesn't need to go 3 times the speed of light. I mean, it could go 1/10 the speed of light, and you know, I mean, you know, I snap my fingers. How many times does a speed of light? You know, does a ray of light go around the Earth? A lot of times. Okay. I mean, it's too fast for the Earth. It's too fast.
So what I'm trying to understand are you saying that yes, maybe they can attain these velocities, but they can't attain them in the Earth's atmosphere, so to speak, or
we have no idea what the limitations are. I mean, all it's telling us here is that because they're not purely finite like I am,
right.
They have half the relationship that we do. There is a potential for them to have this loosened relationship of the finite in terms of going from point A to point B.
And the midway creatures think of as being pretty damn close to a human having been.
Exactly. That's why, that's in a very, very amazing statement. You know, that a grandchild of Adamson and Radha could be that transcendent. Okay, but if you think about it carefully, it's not totally amazing. Those 16 special children of Adamson and Radha, there were times when photons weren't interacting with them. In other words, they are seemingly not very finite. You know, and so, I mean, if photons aren't interacting with your hand, okay, goes through them. Okay, you know. It's not just that you can't see them, you know, but you go bonk. No, your hand goes through them too. I mean, if photons don't interact, your hand's not going to interact. Okay, so you know, just when you think about that recessive combination that gives one of those 16 progenitors, appreciate the super additive.
Yeah,
there, I mean, it's very literally super additive. You've taken them up a notch out of, you know, as definitive a relationship to the finite as their parents have. And then when those two progenitors mate, it takes it up another notch of super additive consequence to the point where it, you know, half of them is really not in the finite anymore in the same way that we think of it. They're very super additive. Now, the big mystery is, okay, if you understood what kind of an energy nature a secondary midwayer is made out of, can you build a craft out of that kind of energy? See? And then you could have a craft that they could get into. And that them and the craft could go effectively 2 times the speed of light. And that'd be a cool thing. Okay.
Could see it.
Yeah, we know. I mean, they tell us what the deal is with the three. Those are these very special beings that just do that, but they leave it completely unspoken about the midwares. Probably because it would be a violation of the revelatory mandate to give us anything there. I mean, it's about physics that, like you were pointing out, is near to us, amazingly near to us, and yet seemingly so far away. The distinct possibility that they can make things that are energy like them. Okay? And they can turn a knob on it. Now you see it, now you don't. Just like they can turn a knob in themselves. Now you see me, now photons are interacting me. Poop, now they're not.
They open the door to the jail.
All right. Okay. So lots and lots of mystery, but that they're trying to give you little clues about the physics here, okay? And Let's see, what else is in there?
Stupid question.
Yep, yep.
You know, in seventh grade science or even in high school science, everybody was always taught that if you went faster than the speed of light, you went back in time. Have you ever heard of that before?
Right. I mean, the idea of a tachyon, okay. I mean, you can mathematically contemplate it. It's rational in the mathematics of special relativity, but it's illogical. Why is it illogical? Because if you extrapolate those equations of relativity to contemplate faster than light objects constrained by those equations, effects precede causes. That's not possible. It's illogical. So the space is there in the mathematics, but it doesn't exist in reality because it's illogical. Nothing that's illogical exists. If I calculate the area of a square table and I get A equals 4, and I go, I wonder how big the side is. How long is a side on that table? I know I can take the square root of both sides, and I get side equals plus or minus the square root of 2. I mean, plus or minus the square root of 4, plus or minus 2. So, I mean, minus 2 is a valid mathematical answer. But logically, no, the length of the side of the table is not minus 2. So you throw that out, the answer is 2. Okay, same thing here. It's illogical on the tachyon, the faster than the speed of light side of those equations. Okay, because causes precede effects. If they didn't, nothing would exist. For instance, you couldn't have a first source and center of all things and beings. He couldn't make himself prior to everything, okay, if you somehow had effects preceding causes. Yeah. All right.
Sorry.
Yep, no. But just, the world's team with angels and men and other highly personal beings, but they are handicapped by time and space, okay? I just want to stress it as long as because they're stressing it there. It is completely indispensable to not have the existence of solitary messengers. A single galaxy like the Milky Way galaxy is vastly too big to manage without them. 3 times the speed of light is snail's pace. It's just completely inadequate to the task. Okay? You couldn't do it. The grand universe would have to be really, really small to be manageable. It's as big as it possibly can be and still be manageable. That's the size of the finite domain, as it were. But it's only manageable at that maximum size because you have ceiling dwellers within that finite domain. If divine counselors didn't go a seventh, roughly the seventh the speed of a solitary messenger, everything would not be manageable either. It'd be completely unmanageable, too big. And that's that kind of thinking, is religionists are not used to that. Religionists are used to a figmentary cosmology,
magic,
where magic takes care of whatever they want, to happen. There is no magic. They are handicapped. Okay, it would literally be impossible. The entire administration of the super universe would collapse if it wasn't for solitary messengers. If it wasn't for divine counselors being able to go that fast, etc. Okay. All right. Let's get the punctuation mark on the solitary messenger speed here.
Solitary messengers are, therefore, generally used for dispatch and service in those situations where personality is essential to the achievement of the assignment and where it is desired to avoid the loss of time which would be occasioned by the sending of any other readily available type of personal messenger. They are the only definitely personalized beings who can synchronize with the combined universal currents of the grand universe. Their velocity in traversing space is variable, depending on a great variety of interfering influences. but the record shows that on the journey to fulfill this mission, my associate messenger proceeded at the rate of 841,621,642,000 of your miles per second of your time.
Okay, so that's 4.5 million times the speed of light. And like I said, if you divide that by about 7, you'll get how many times the speed of light a divine counselor goes. So 4.5 million times the speed of light, and even but he's not an instanter. He's not totally transcendent of finite facts. So the amount of matter and energy and whatnot between point A and point B affects him, slows him down. The more stars that he has to transcend between point A and point B, the slower his effective speed. Again, just think of it as effective. He's got some tiny little fingernail, dragging down in the finite is all he has. He has 1/4 millionth the relationship to the finite that you do.
Like a headwind.
Right? Yeah. Just very tiny, but is a relationship. And so, you integrate along his path and, and there's some net effect of being forced into the finite that much that on his effective speed. Okay, they're just
go through stars or around them.
Well, see, it doesn't. I mean, he's going above them, quote unquote. See, in an absentite sense, it's a finite star. The absentite part that's mostly in motion doesn't see the finite star. It's not there.
So from your point of view, he could go right through it.
Right.
It's not like...
That tiny little bit of relationship to the finite is going through them. If you have to use a particular preposition, that would be it. It's going through them. It's in the same way that I have to walk through air to walk across this room. Okay, now that's, I can understand I'm actually, they're going, the molecules are bouncing off me and going around me and whatnot. I'm not literally, but you can certainly allow something like this, just what we know about physics so far. I mean, 100 years ago, we recognized that table is not as solid as it looks. It's mostly free space. It's made out of molecules, and the molecules are made out of atoms, and there's all kinds of relative space between those.
That's what they say when you hit my golf ball. Trees are all 90% air.
Yeah. So a tiny little bullet, can pass right through that table because there's all kinds of great big spaces from its perspective, and it just goes right through like nothing's there, just like I slip in between the air molecules, okay? There's space through that table. It's not like the table pushed space out of the way and space is just wrapped around it. There's space that goes through the table, okay? The solitary messenger has a relationship to finite space, whether that finite space is here or inside that table, okay? But there's also a spatial aspect to that table that's greater than the lower density air molecules here. He effectively has to go through more space to go through that table. He has to go through the space between the atoms and the space within the atoms at the same time. And so it takes him longer to go through that much space. If it's all free space, then he'll achieve his fastest speed. But the more more space of matter that he has to traverse, as well as the space of just space, the longer the path, and the slower his effective speed.
When you go trolling and fishing, you're pulling a lure on a fishing rod behind you, and that lure is kind of what's in the finite, but you're being in the water, but you're mostly out of the water,
Mm-hmm.
In the absent.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, he has just that little bit down there in the finite. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, all this stuff I'm saying, see, you know, this is the kind of non-billiard ball physics, you know, the relativists are trying to get you to think about. We don't have to try to understand that physics right now in detail. But, you know, many places they try to get you to understand it's a universe of motion, not a universe of matter. It's not a universe of matter in a big empty container called space. It's a universe of motion. And the simplest thing that you, when you think about motion, you think of speed. Well, speed is like miles per hour, distance divided by time, space divided by time. See, there's a spaceness in the motion that is everything. So there's just the space, and then there's the space that's in the motion of the things. He has to traverse both open space and that space, the space of the motion. So the more motion there is that he's in relationship with, the longer the path. So if he has to pass through a super high density, you know, a dark gravity body, there's a lot of space, you know, associated with that.
I always used to think of it as folded space, because it's all, you know, lots of spatial surface area.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, it's that's enough, I think, on that. Okay.
So if the midway creature you were saying, they could appear and not appear.
A secondary, right? Uh-huh.
So that would be that kind of explains more of what these solitary messengers may have, because they have personality, but they don't hardly have any form.
They don't have any form at all.
Okay, so they're like that.
Yeah, they're right. See, and that's it is just like that. See, only in this case, that the secondary messenger is making itself just a little bit transcendent. You know, sort of lifting itself above where your hand is moving, and so your hand passes through that spot. This guy is way, way up. Okay, so, I mean, even really high beings, you know, can't find a body anywhere, you know. They can't get their hands on him. I mean, even these very high beings don't see any form. There doesn't seem to be any boundary. There's a spirit presence, but there's no boundary that they can discern.
It's form?
Formless. Well, as we see in the next section, you'll see what kind of phenomena are, you know, attached to it. Let's not jump the gun on that yet. One little thing just to keep in mind right here about that, in terms of how important they are that they can go that fast. Okay, if you're limited to a transport seraphim, you know, let's say you'd like to send a Melchizedek from here to Uversa with a message. You know, so you stick him in a transport seraphim and off he goes. Gets 200,000 light years to Uversa. At three times the speed of light, that's going to take you how long? 67,000 years. 67,000 years to get to Uversa. Okay, they are handicapped. Okay, that's going to be pretty unacceptable for a lot of situations. You know, sometimes, you know, if it gets done in a million years, that's adequate, like we read last time. But other times, no, 67,000 years is way too long, you know, between point A and point B. Well, how long is it going to take a solitary messenger to go 200,000 light years when he's going 4.5 million times the speed of light? Just a little over 16 days, you know, half a month. Okay, now that's more reasonable, you know, a little over a couple weeks. He can get there instead of 67,000 years. Okay? And so, you know, you're going, well, I don't want Orvintan to just be the Milky Way galaxy. That's too small. It needs to be tens of millions of light years across. Are you kidding me? It already takes 67,000 years just to go from here to Uversa, let alone local systems that are farther out. What are you talking about? It's too small. It's practically too big to be manageable, okay? It's as big as it can be and even be remotely manageable, all right? You know, if it took you 67,000 years to walk from one side of your a factory to the other, it'd be a little harder to manage the things going on in that factory, right? It'd be a little complicated. Okay.
Why are those guys still in business?
I've asked that question many times.
All right, so just play with these numbers, and even at 4.5 million times the speed of light, it still takes him over 16 days. So it's not a day trip. It's still a haul, and when they go from Uversa to Paradise and back, that's a haul. Okay, it's going to take them a while.
Remember when Melchizedek took 5 years to get here, with the Lucifer Rebellion or something like that?
Those Melchizedeks are being transported by Transport Seraphim. That's why those, with both the receivers coming 200,000 years ago and the receivers coming after the default, when you notice that there's a 5-year gap, it makes you suspicious that's indirectly, that's telling you that Gerasim is 15 light years away. They don't state it directly, but it's highly suspicious, that at both times it's 5 years. And it's probably because it's 15 light years away, roughly. It takes you 5 years to get here from Gerasim.
Why didn't they send a solitary messenger? Why didn't solitary messenger?
Well, they undoubtedly were going back and forth. But the Melchizedeks have to actually come here and be resident here. So, they have to get hauled by transport.
The solitary messengers couldn't have gotten a message?
Messages. Like, for instance, Michael sent a personal message to Adam and Eve. Remember that? They were very comforted by this personal message from Michael. How did that get here? May very well have gotten here by a solitary messenger. Could have been other beings too. Wouldn't necessarily have had to have gotten here really, really fast, but it could have been. He could have sent a solitary messenger to send that message. Michael couldn't send it on the circuits and talk to Adam and Eve. The circuits are severed. So he had to actually send a person, or someone, some messenger had to actually go from point A to point B with the message.
But events here on your ranch are being observed, though, right?
Yeah, I mean,
is that transmission occurring?
There's a lot of intelligence of what's going on the planet that is getting, say, from here to Uversa, where the being that's watching your mind is watching you. There's no need for any message to be conveyed across space, because the mind is ubiquitous. I mean, the creative mother spirit, for instance, doesn't have to send messages to herself across Nebadon. She exists at every point in Nebadon. Her consciousness is simultaneous in the whole space. And so when you're talking about that sort of mindal intelligence, that knowing of things, that's, that doesn't have any transport time, because it's a consciousness that's so ubiquitous. Okay. The thing that is also like that is the reflectivity mechanism. It's present everywhere simultaneously, because it's a totally transcendent fact imposed upon the finite. So, but it's not personal. But it is more just a conveying a message, as opposed to having a consciousness of something remotely. Basically those beings on high that are reading your mind right now and recording everything that's important, that's a remote viewing technique. They're just journeying in the mindless, energy system and looking at you remotely. The same way that when you're on Gerasim, a lot of times you won't have to jiggle air molecules to communicate. Or you can sit way in the nosebleed seats in that incredible amphitheater and see the details on the stage, because you just remote view the stage. You don't have to have really big binoculars or something. You can just put your consciousness there and see it. So that, There's lots of ways of, you know, that they get around the handicap, but there's some things that are, you know, like getting a Melchizedek from Gerizim to here to be a receiver. He's got a putt on him, transport seraphim, however long it takes. What was that?
Or getting your soul to Jerusalem.
Or getting your soul to, you know, the first mansion world. Someone's got to putt it there, yeah.
So no matter how spiritual you are, still aren't going
to
wake
up. Only way you can get that soul from here to the first mansion world like that is if you fuse here. You know, then the thought adjuster takes it there.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's quick.
But otherwise, yeah, even if you're a first circle or whatever, it's got to be putt.
Adjusters travel at these kind of speeds or even faster.
Adjusters go in instant. You know, they're instanters. They can be
anywhere.
Yeah. They travel. Their effective speed is infinite because they have zero relationship to the finite.
Yeah.
Right, they have to drop down in and stand in line, and then they pop back out again. And
it's all paperwork.
Right.
Yeah.
It's not limitations.
Right.
It sounds like interstate
traffic on I-20. All right, okay. So that should be enough to kind of to have something to rattle around in your brain a little bit. Okay. All right.
It is wholly beyond my ability to explain to the material type of mind how a spirit can be a real person and at the same time traverse space at such tremendous velocities. But these very solitary messengers actually come to and go from Urantia at these incomprehensible speeds. Indeed, the whole economy of universal administration would be largely deprived of its personal element were this not a fact.
See, it would be deprived of its personal own. It would be this wonderful actuality, but not much of a reality. It would be just this impersonal universe. It wouldn't be a cosmos.
So you're saying it's the bland universe?
Can you explain that concept, the personal?
I can't, totally, and that's the whole point. I'm challenging myself to ever appreciate more and more what isn't personality. I mean, I can say some things about personality, but to define it is not to understand it. I can say a lot of things. You know, you've heard me talk about it endlessly. But just try to challenge yourself to appreciate that they're in the same way that when you think about these levels of sequence that you can be conscious of, that there's progressing mind. It's like, well, I thought progress was sort of the highest thing I could think of. Now, that's just, there's progressing mind. That's one kind of sequence. But transcendent of that is perfecting spirit. It's like, well, I'm not sure what that is. Well, transcendent of that is harmonizing personality. So how much do we have from a mindal perspective, how much do we have an immediate sense of personality? Zero. Okay. You know, there's a whole domain in between, you know, the mindal sort of awareness of things and where personality actually functions and does what it does, harmonize. So that's one of the things, you know, I mean, you can reflect on. The cosmos means universal harmony or harmonizing universe. If you need to send a personal messenger, there's a nugget of harmony that has to be conveyed that can't be put on the wires. Okay? It's embodied only in the grasp of a person, transported and bestowed. Now that harmonizing personality, that, you know, that ability to take individuality, associativity, and unity, you know, like in the chart here, bring in personality and make a tri-unity out of those three separate facts, individuality, associativity, unity. You can encompass them with personality and make them something that you call a tri-unity, sort of factually, but more poetically and understandingly, a harmony. You can harmonize that threefold actuality. Okay? You know, technically the unity we're talking about here is triunity, or harmony, like we see, you know, down here in this block of the tribes. Why harmony is down there in that personality block. See, so the more that I take delight in cultivating, have a relationship with the three cosmic intuitions, I'm actually using my personality, something my agent, you know, that I'm doing something my agent mind can't do in and of itself. The more I begin to actually feel the harmony of the cosmos, the more I know I will begin to have an insight. It might be hard for me to convey it to you, but I'll have an insight of exactly why sometimes you'd need a solitary messenger instead of just the reflectivity mechanism or something.
Would it be because when you harmonize with the other person, it's like your mind or the spirit or whatever it is joins to be one, like?
Right. So that's you know, what do we say at the, you know, in our brief reflection at the beginning? This distinction is vital. That whole bit about being able to be connected from one to another through the individuality as a whole, that's only if there's personality. Only harmony can go through that wire.
So the reflectivity mechanism is not a triune.
The reflectivity mechanism is not personal. I'll get right back to that. It was just what I was about to say about that connecting through the individual whole. I mean, you know, like the Father's personality circuit also, or this connectivity, one cosmic individual to another. What's the wire? What's the conductor through which this connection is being made in the Father's, you know, volitional circuit, or in that connection through the Mother? That's deity substance. The reflectivity presence is not deity. And so, but you can actually, you can convey personality through deity. You can convey volition through deity. It conducts that. You can personalize deity, for instance, and make God, you know, another way, you know, appreciate that relationship. See, the reflectivity presence, the substrate, you know, if you want to think of it that way, or what the conductor is that is connecting things, is just the cosmic presence of the Supreme Mind. It's not deity. Okay, see, so it's more thing-like in the way we understand things. All right, so you in order to convey this kind of stuff, you know, if you aren't a deity conduit, you need a personal messenger. Okay. All right. Let's see. Did we go through everything there? We got so off on that tangent, I can't remember if there was anything else. Let's see. We got everything there. Okay.
The solitary messengers are able to function as emergency lines of communication throughout remote space regions, realms not embraced within the established circuits of the grand universe. It develops that one messenger, when so functioning, can transmit a message or send an impulse through space to a fellow messenger about 100 light years away, as Urantia astronomers estimate stellar distances.
Okay. Look beyond the immediate there. They're giving you a clue about the nature of a solitary messenger. Okay, you know, there's other spots like Pam was referring to there where they tell you, they don't have a form. They just have a spirit presence that can be sensed by high spirit beings. Okay, well, if there's a presence, if presence is... in general, aren't infinite in extent. What's the footprint of these guys? They've got a radius of about 100 light years. No wonder you can't, even a very high being can't see some sort of form Okay. They're like little mini mother facts, you know, where they have these ubiquitous presences. That's giving you a little clue there. See, so they can instantaneously communicate from one side of their mind to the other. You know, just like the creative mother spirit can instantaneously be aware from one side of her mind to the other. It doesn't have to take any time. She knows it all at the same time. You know, so that solitary messenger knows that 100 light year radius because he's present there simultaneously. And so if you bring two of those presences, you know, next to each other, you know, they can communicate at the boundary of that footprint. Okay. Now you could say, well, okay, 100 light years, okay, from our perspective, that's pretty darn big. Okay, but again, when you're talking about 200,000 light years and stuff like that, it's kind of tiny. But in what sense is it pretty significant? Well, that's going to, you can stick any local system inside that. Okay, so it gives you a little sense of how they relate to the cosmos, see? They sort of, you know, what's the size of their gate? They sort of step from one local system to the next.
Yeah.
Okay? So, you know, when you think of them having that big of a footprint, you know, 4.5 million times the speed of light isn't as fast as it was before. It's still pretty darn fast, but, see, they're kind of an instanter across that span.
Right.
Now, another way to look at that, it's like, well, okay, so if something's 100 light years away, they could, you know, and there's another solitary messenger over there, they could just instantaneously convey a message. They wouldn't have to actually go that 100 light years. It's like, well, and what if they did? How long would it take them? Well, they could go 100 light years in under 12 minutes. So, you know, from that perspective, it's like, well, okay, 6 and 1/2 dozen another, you know, big deal, you can do it in zero time or 12 minutes. I mean, what, you know, what's the big deal about them being able to communicate over 100 light years? Well, see, again, that's the thing is that they have a ubiquity of presence over that span. So they bring a measure of unity into that much space, wherever they are. There's a connectivity of things because of it. Just like the Creative Mother Spirit's presence over the size of the whole local universe, you know, brings this intimate connectivity throughout that whole space. So there's more to this than just getting a message from point A to point B. Bringing that kind of definitive unity into that big of a space, a whole local system, okay, that's going to have an impact. You know, and if you have a whole bunch of solitary messengers in a local system, I mean, you have layer upon layer of coordination going on in that local system.
You know, this radius, is this spherical radius?
Yeah. I mean,
that's a footprint.
Right. I mean, it's, yeah, I mean, you might have to guess that, I guess. But who knows? It's a little hard to say, since we don't know anything of the physics in any detail.
Of the myriads of beings who cooperate with us in the conduct of the affairs of the super universe, none are more important in practical helpfulness and time-saving assistance. In the universes of space, we must reckon with the handicaps of time. Hence the great service of the solitary messengers, who by means of their personal prerogatives of communication are somewhat independent of space, and by virtue of their tremendous transit velocities, are so nearly independent of time.
See, they've got that 100 light year radius independence of space, and they're almost completely independent of time. Yep.
I am at a loss to explain to you Rancher mortals how the solitary messengers can be without form and yet possess real and definite personalities. Although they are without that form which would naturally be associated with personality, they do possess a spirit presence which is discernible by all higher types of spirit beings. The solitary messengers are the only class of beings who seem to be possessed of well-nigh all the advantages of a formless spirit, coupled with all the prerogatives of a full-fledged personality. They are true persons, yet endowed with nearly all of the attributes of impersonal spirit manifestation.
Okay, so that's kind of saying what we're pointing out. And the real mystery, if you just think in simple terms about personality, if you think of it as spirit pattern, something that can grasp spirit energy and, you know, ball it up into your grasp, you know, there's a mystery here. You know, why doesn't this personality ball this thing up? Why is it still spread out over this 100-light-year radius? You know, they don't quite understand how that is. I mean, obviously, it must have some similarity to how you can have the creative mother spirit, especially now, post-Pentecost, being pretty distinctly personal and yet not balled up. She's still spread out over all of Nebadon. But there you have mind, you know, more immediately. It's not just a spirit presence, it's a mind presence, too, in Nebadon. You know, here it's just a spirit presence more directly. So that's why they're a little confused why it doesn't get balled up. Because, you know, if you have an actual domain of matter, domain of individuality that mind is engaging, even if you're squeezing on the spirit, you can't. The mind is locked into Nebadon, see, so you can't ball it up. I mean, see, so that. But you know, if they're so transcendent and not really have that much relationship to anything that would keep them stretched out, why don't they just ball up into a point individual like the author? You know, it's like this divine counselor is like just here. You know, he doesn't have this presence. He's all balled up by personality into a point, you know, into a location. So that's the mystery.
God, now, sometimes you do feel, I mean, I have felt, I guess it's God, I feel like I've felt the presence, the spirit presence of God giving me strength.
Mm-hmm.
So would that be similar?
Well, we're in touch with two presences very immediately, the Holy Spirit, Spirit of Truth. Those are presences that we have the potential to feel. In that same way, they're, you know, those are presences that are spread out over all of Nebadon. And we can touch them here and touch them here. Yeah. Let's see. Was there anything else there? No. So just but it does. They're going to point out that it, it's really, really handy that they don't ball up, because, you know, they can be two things at the same time. Then they can be personal and presence-like. So it's darn handy, they're saying.
In the seven super universes, ordinarily, but not always, everything which tends to increase any creature's liberation from the handicaps of time and space proportionately diminishes personality prerogatives. Solitary messengers are an exception to this general law. They are, in their activities, all but unrestricted in the utilization of any and all of the limitless avenues of spiritual expression, divine service, personal ministry, and cosmic communication. If you could view these extraordinary beings in the light of my experience in universe administration, you would comprehend how difficult it would be to coordinate super universe affairs were it not for their versatile cooperation. No matter how much the universe may enlarge, no more solitary messengers will probably ever be created. As the universes grow, the expanded work of administration must be increasingly borne by other types of spirit ministers and by those beings who take origin in these new creations, such as the creatures of the Sovereign Sons and the local universe Mother Spirits.
That little passing reference at the end there, remember we touched on that back when we were talking about the Creator's Sons. I think it was at the end of that paper. They were speculating about, well, what happens when the Creative Mother Spirit does finally let go of her space and, you know, become a localized personality and takes Michael's hand. The two of them go out and work in the first outer space level. They're now in an Absonite domain, not just because they're out there, but, you know, we've transcended the finite. They're not, so he can unleash his creator prerogatives now again. You know, he has to keep them bottled up right now because, you know, he can't be making Absonite things in the finite. But he can, you know, he can let loose. And the creative mother spirit really came down from the Absonite, so she's always kept that bottled up. But she can unleash that too. So they could bring all kinds of Absonite beings that no one has the slightest idea who they might be, you know, into existence, and that's what they're pointing out. Who knows? Maybe they'll make all kinds of amazing new individuals to make it work out there. You know, what kind of relative handicaps you'll have? I mean, nothing that you know now about how big the first outer space level is comparison to the super universe level is relevant, because that's all finite distances and you transcend all that. I mean, the distance between the central universe and the outer edge of the fourth outer space level in finite terms becomes zero length from an Absonite perspective. So, I mean, but, you know, when you're engaging it in an Absonite, how big is it, you know? You know, it will have some extent, and there will, you know, I'm sure it's as big as you can make it still be manageable, you know, and so you'll have to have beings that are ceiling dwellers there too that can, you know, bridge those big Absonite distances, just like here.
Yep.
So this thing here where it says that everything which tends to increase any creature's liberation handicaps of time and space proportionately diminishes personality prerogatives. So, you know, as we become more spiritual and get closer to God, become a finaliter, we in fact are decreasing our handicaps of time and space to a certain degree. Does that mean that we also diminish our personality prerogative? Is that talking about other beings?
Yeah, you see, this is, yeah, I mean, that's an exception again. You know, they're just speaking in terms of there's lots of spirit presences and stuff and entities and whatnot, you know, by and large that aren't talked about. You know, and they have this extended nature because personality hasn't encompassed it and brought it all to a location. That's all he's talking about is just that. I mean, the fundamentally the reason why you can go up so high and still you know and begin to have this relationship with so much more and not lose your personality nature is because you bring everything from down below up with you. You start out very, very definitively in individuality and localized, and you don't burn that bridge. You still embody that. So even as a finaliter, you can still come all the way down and touch that table. Whereas these things he's talking about, they're just created up at some level, and they have, just have no relationship to the more individuality down below. So, yeah. They're just this presence, and yeah.
Would that be related to the children of the eternal sun?
Well, you know, they're even more off in mystery land in, you know, in our regard here. You know, you just call them children because you know they talk about them like that. But remember, none of the authors that call them that understand really how that word is can be applicable because children are individuals and they are pure unity, zero individuality. So it's a nonsensical thing from even their higher finite perspective, you know, and it may even be to a degree nonsensical from a lot of Absonite perspective because it's probably co-absolute stuff and just really mysterious. All right, let's see. All right, so yeah, let's get this last little bit. So they give us a few more tidbits here, especially this loose end that Nick was referring to that I needed to tie up here.
For special ministry of solitary messengers. The solitary messengers seem to be personality coordinators for all types of spirit beings. Their ministry helps to make all the personalities of the far-flung spiritual worlds akin. They contribute much to the development, in all spirit beings, of a consciousness of group identity. Every type of spirit being is served by special groups of solitary messengers who foster the ability of such beings to understand and fraternize with all other types and orders, however dissimilar.
Okay, so, well, before you read that, just, you know, let's just see how you can, you can answer the why to that paragraph now, can't you? I mean, you know, notice how carefully he stated it, you know, all spirit beings, you know, and, you know, far-flung spiritual world. He has this extended spirit presence, you know, that they can all touch and then touch each, you know, be in common through it, you know. And notice how, see, they're pointing out it's augmenting this individual, you know, he's a whole with an individuality. They use the word coordinate, that mother word, or at the very least, a, you know, a Trinity word. All right, see, they're like we said up front, even though these beings come into existence from the infinite spirit apart from the Paradise Trinity, so the there isn't that mind presence, that more mother-like aspect. You know, they have this presence, so it's a quasi, see, mother-like, and it can immediately function in that mode to a degree. And so they'll use coordinate.
So this okay. is a different function than taking messages.
Yeah. Yeah, they see, that's the thing, that's the key about this, special ministry, see.
Kind of cool.
It's a ministry, not a messenger service now. Yeah. That whole bit about kindred spirits is augmented by them. Kindred minds, okay, that's another matter, you know, to take it up a notch. But they at least help with that existential initiation of the process, the kindred spirit thing, just like the Father really helped with that by giving us all a spirit fragment so that it's more immediate for us to become kindred spirits. But we have to consecrate our minds and take it up a notch to the kindred mind level. Okay, and so do these beings. But boy, that, you know, this more existential fact is helping initiate the kindred spirit phenomenon. So that's something that I think is often forgotten about, that little comment. It's actually a very profound thing, and it's a significant presence, 100 light year radius. So it could do amazing things to help a local universe, which is about that footprint, come together. And see, there's probably all kinds of unrecognized things that are a result of just their presence amongst us and bringing things together.
The solitary messengers demonstrate such an amazing ability to coordinate all types and orders of finite personality, even to make contact with the absonite regime of the Master Universe Overcontrollers, that some of us postulate that the creation of these messengers by the Infinite Spirit is in some manner related to the conjoint actor's bestowal of supreme ultimate mind.
Huh? Okay. That one should really catch you off guard.
All right.
What the heck is supreme ultimate mind? Okay. You know, I'll just, you know, tease you a little bit again without going into a lot of the details. But remember when we were talking about the Master Spirits? And they said point blank there at the beginning of the Master Spirit paper that they have both supreme and ultimate personality activity, but just up to the ultimate. Okay. And when you think about this, you know, we know that there's seven super universes because there's seven Master Spirits. So the fact that the seven super universes are separated, it's not a low-level separation. It's not just a low-level separation. It's a pretty high-level separation. I mean, they have ultimate personality activity. So, I mean, if you're going to bridge the gap, if you're going to not, you know, if you don't have to go in radially, and then go out again, like we were talking about, to get from this super universe over to the next one. If you're going to do like a solitary messenger does and go as the crow flies to super universe number one, you have to transcend the ultimate separation that the master spirits have put between those two. There's an ultimate separation. That's the level of which the master spirits function, the highest level. You have to go above the ultimate. You have to go to the supreme ultimate to go over the top of what they've divided. Okay? And we mentioned this, you know, each of the master spirits individually goes up to the ultimate, but they collectively function. And not just in the triunity sense, but it's a literal organic fact. There is a eighth fact that is supreme ultimate deity. The super additive consequence of that supreme and ultimate stuff together leads to an eighth fact that's supreme ultimate deity that's greater than each of the seven master spirits. That thing called the sevenfold spirit, not the sevenfold, but the sevenfold spirit, that's it, you know, the supreme ultimate mind of that supreme ultimate deity. And, you know, when we talk about, you know, you ring up the psychic circles, again, if you are down in the womb of a particular super universe, if you're at the individual super universe level, you have those reflective mother spirits of the master spirits. If you're going to transcend that, if you're going to go up a notch, you got to be plugged into a higher level of spirit and mind presence. Creator Mother agencies of the Ancients of Days, you know, we've talked about that. The Ancients of Days are uniform all the way around. They aren't separated. They're the coordinate mother beings with the Ancients of Days, you know, produce a mind womb that goes all the way around. Okay, see, when you talk about supreme ultimate, you're talking about getting up, you know, in this universe age, you're getting up into that domain that transcends the boundaries of the master spirits and goes all the way around like the supreme that presses on the whole from above. So there's a wholeness underneath that you can engage. You know, the interfaces with the wholeness that's coming down from above, you know, like in this case, the Universal Mother. Okay? That's what they're pointing out, that has to be in play, just simply because they know they go as the crow flies. The only way they could do that is if they somehow embody the supreme ultimate aspect. So in other words, the infinite spirit has put them up at that level. Okay. And the other consequence, or the other way that you can indirectly deduce that, like they are, is that they can go out into the outer space levels. Okay, so if you think about the grand universe, you have this supreme thing. It's going to be encompassed by the ultimate. And so if you're going to really treat the whole grand universe as one fact, you have that ultimate encompassment. But if you're going to treat the whole master universe as one fact, you know, this ultimate thing, you have to go to the supreme ultimate, see, encompassing that. So that's another way. But more directly is just that simple fact that it's ultimate walls that divide. And if you're going to go over the wall, you got to go above the ultimate. Okay? So that's how they deduce that. All right, let's get a little more here.
When a finaliter and a paradise citizen cooperate in the trinitization of a child of time and eternity, a transaction involving the unrevealed mind potential of the supreme ultimate, And when such an unclassified personality is dispatched to Vice Gerrington, a solitary messenger, a conjectured personality repercussion of the bestowal of such deity mind, is always assigned as guardian companion to such a creature trinitized son. This messenger accompanies the new son of destiny to the world of his assignment and nevermore leaves Vice Gerrington. When thus attached to the destinies of a child of time and eternity, a solitary messenger is forever transferred to the sole supervision of the architects of the master universe. What the future of such an extraordinary association may be, we do not know. For ages, these partnerships of unique personalities have continued to foregather on Vice Gerrington, but not even a single pair has ever gone forth therefrom.
Okay. Let's pick up the part of this that ties into the previous first before we talk a little bit more about the Trinitized Sons of Destiny there. You see, they're bringing you more of the Supreme Ultimate picture here. Notice how, okay, a solitary messenger, is that parenthetical in there? Now, parenthetically, they say a conjectured personality repercussion of the bestowal of such deity mind. So in other words, see, I was just talking about that. That, what's that deity mind they're talking about? It's this mindal womb of the creative mother agencies of the ancients of days. They're saying, if you lay out a mindal womb up there at the ceiling, they're thinking, okay, you're manifesting a wholeness up there. They're thinking that these individualities are a repercussion of that they're a reciprocal expression of that same creative act of bringing that higher level into play, that there are beings that are intimately in that level, that are by nature in that level, you know, in the same way that you bring the central universe in existence. It's not empty. It's filled with all the personalities at the same time, too. So you have a whole and all the parts that go with it, naturally. And then down the road, other parts rise up to that level and plug themselves into it. But there's some that are just there by nature. So that's what they mean by that. That if you're going to make this domain up there, there has to be beings that are just by nature up there. And the solitary messengers seem to be, you know, to fit that bill. You, as a finaliter, you claw your way all the way up to the Isle of Paradise. You go out, and as a finaliter, you're not restricted to a super universe anymore. I mean, you ignore the boundaries between the super universes. You engage the whole seven. You're at the collective super universe level. You're plugged into that mind. Remember, that's why they tell you about the reflective mother agencies, but they have to put unrevealed in front of them. It's like, well, you just told me about them. They're not really totally unrevealed. But what they're doing is unreal because, remember, they tell you point blank. They're not allowed to talk about the details of what happens after the ascension career. This is limited to just the ascension career. But see, you can put two and two together. I mean, I have to be plugged into some womb of mind after the ascension career. Duh. Okay. You're now up there, plugged into the same womb of mind that the solitary messengers have always been plugged into. Okay. And it's kind of heady stuff, you know, in terms of its potential. See, you're already manifesting you're foreshadowing, let's say it that way, you're foreshadowing a career that's going to transcend the Master Universe. Whoa. See, by the very fact that you've gotten up to something that transcends the ultimate. See, so while you're still just in this age, the signs of your future are clear. You know, the end of the fourth outer space level age is not going to stop you. You're going to go through that to the co-absolute, okay, and the cosmos infinite. It'll be a while.
A couple months.
But what else also foreshadows this? These special children, these creature trinitized sons. You take a paradise of honor and a finaliter, you put them together, and you get one of these trinitized sons of destiny. How super additive is that consequence of that relationship? Very. Okay. And they're up in that ceiling domain, and they are so up towards the top of that ceiling domain that they really don't have any relationship to anything except the ceiling. They don't even have a relationship to, a millimeter of depth down in the finite. All they know is the ceiling. And so they become the wards of the master architects, the guys that were actually up on the other side. I was holding off. You notice they mentioned that in the previous paragraph, that solitary messengers, that other parenthetical there, even to make contact with the absonite regime of the master universe overcontrollers. See, they can touch the ceiling, okay, and the master architects can touch the other side. It's the floor for them, okay, and the two interface there.
Okay. They're no longer solitary.
Right, they're just taken off the game board, taken out of play, sequestered on Vice Gerrington.
So in a way, maybe that's their fusion, or that's their goal to get somewhere, or that's an assignment of future whatever.
And now you're doing what the Revelators love to do, and they're going to put a whole bunch of speculation questions like that, coming up here. The moment that you see this, you're going, what is that? And you start speculating like mad. You ask questions like that. Yeah, so let's read some of those.
Solitary messengers are of stationary numbers, but the trinitization of the Sons of Destiny is apparently an unlimited technique. Since each trinitized son of destiny has assigned to him a solitary messenger, it appears to us that at some time in the remote future, the supply of messengers will become exhausted. Who will take up their work in the grand universe? Will their service be assumed by some new development among the inspired Trinity spirits? Is the grand universe at some remote period going to be more nearly administered by Trinity origin beings, while the single and dual origin creatures move on to the realms of outer space? If the messengers return to their former service, will these sons of destiny accompany them? Will the trinitizations between finaliters and paradise havoners cease when the supply of solitary messengers has been absorbed as guardian companions of these sons of destiny? Are all our efficient solitary messengers going to be concentrated on Vice Gerrington? Are these extraordinary spirit personalities going to be eternally associated with these trinitized sons of unrevealed destiny? What significance should we attach to the fact that these couples, foregathering on Vice Gerrington, are under the exclusive direction of those mighty mystery beings, the architects of the Master Universe? These and many similar questions we ask ourselves and ask numerous other orders of celestial beings, but we do not know the answers.
See, they got lots of questions. And you see, some of them are basically kind of shades of what you were asking there, see. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay, maybe because these beings, they're on such a very high level of wherever the solitary messengers, their circuit is, that I guess they kind of join to become one, basically, and that's why they never leave. I mean, that is, think about how much they're giving up. I mean, they're traveling everywhere, doing everything, and all of a sudden, here they are in Vice Gerrington. So it must be something very wonderful to be attached to these beings.
Yeah.
So high that they don't want to go anywhere else.
Yeah, yeah.
So if they're all gathering at Vice Gerrington,
right,
they're all coming close to each other, which they don't like to do.
That's
which
true.
Sort of turns them off.
Right.
They're at rest now.
Right. They unplug themselves, obviously, to a degree, and
to be there, because if there's that many of them, they got to be somewhere near each other, especially if, as you say, they can encompass Now, I don't know how big my sharing is. I'm sure it's pretty big.
Right. That the one contrast, you know, that's why I threw in, as I said, that to a degree. The thing that we don't understand is how high a place Vice Jerrington is. So they, you know, they're normally cruising up here. They may not have to go down very far to get to Vice Jerrington. See, yeah. You know, it's
probably pretty high.
So they may not be as unplugged as we think. You know, as we might first think, but you know, I mean, a similar thing to appreciate is there's no indication that an adjuster is unplugging into any to any great degree when it goes to Devinington. See, so you know, it's normally way, way up, and it just, you know, it doesn't seem to indicate that there's some kind of coming down, and it has to be. It's, you know, at a location. It's not everywhere. Okay, so it is coming down a little bit, and then they speak of it sort of putting itself back up into everything again, you know, and then coming back really back down into prison when it goes down into your mind, but it's going to be some measure of unplugging, you know, and but like we said, when they do that, they now can actually be more involved with the mindful connectivity through the mother and not so much just this existential infinite spirit thing. So they could really work on this intimate, developing this intimate personal relationship through that individuality of the whole with their apparently eternal partners, and, you know, these Trinitized sons of destiny.
Why do you think they say guardian companion?
Simply because when a Paradise of Honor and a Finaliter make a Trinitized Son of Destiny, you know, it's just been born. It opens its eyes and it's like, what on earth is this? They need someone who knows the ropes up there in the ceiling. Yeah, okay, and that's all their messengers do. Another thing between the lines there to reflect. I remember how this paper started as we were, you know, imagining quadrillions or quintillions of these solitary messengers. Seems like a really big number. But remember what they said about the number of Havona natives, that it's beyond your concept?
Yeah.
Okay. So how much beyond our concept is it? It's so beyond our concept that you can take a very, very, very tiny fraction of the Havona natives that make a Trinitized Son of Destiny. And that tiny, tiny fraction is enough to consume all of the solitary messengers. However many quadrillions or quintillions of them there are. Okay, there's a lot of Havona natives. I mean, it's not a, I mean, you knew there was an awful lot of Finaliters. You know, that's, but there's obviously an awful lot of Havona natives and Paradise citizens, you know, too, where, because this is a very, very, you know, tiny fraction that are making these kind of creature trinitized sons. So that just remind yourself.
You said last week.
Yeah.
When you were talking about that they're all created perfect, and they couldn't create any more. So they've done, all the created perfect beings were created, which, and so now we're starting out down here, and we're becoming perfect by another route. In other words, through evolution, etc., or time and space. So there's probably as many of them as there are going to be as many of us if we're going to get to this. So you're right. I mean, the number must be...
Yeah.
You can't even fathom.
If I remember right, it says something like it's beyond your concept. I believe it uses an expression like that.
What gender do you think solitary messengers are? And are all of the Trinitized children of time and eternity the same gender?
Well, I mean, you can kind of see that from our perspective, it's going to be kind of awkward to choose he or she. I mean, on the one hand, you know, they're this very definitive, personalization, like we were talking about, of the infinite spirit, and is, you know, the infinite spirit is, you know, is absolutely transcendent. So it's a he-like fact. You know, it's not a God within fact. So it's a he-like fact, and so you would tend to think of them as in that image as being he-like point things. But you know, like we're pointing out, they also have this extended presence. So they're shades of both. You know, and in a way that kind of is different than the way we use he or she. So see, they're kind of neither in a sense, and both.
Let's say you ended up creating one of these beings. Well, you know, whatever gender you might call yourself at that time, which isn't really a gender, it might, because you were a creator of this being, it might take on that particular aspect of you.
Right. I mean, we talked about creature trinitized sons. You could see there was shades of, you know, a male female duality in the pair that makes them.
Does the child have?
Right. I mean, the key thing here is, you know, if you're making something that's really more of an absonite fact. I mean, remember, they point out that even the words truth, beauty, and goodness break down when you go to the absonite. I mean, though, you know, that three, this is a, this threefold actuality, that's just definitively about the finite.
Right.
When you're just talking about the first two triodities, right. When you bring in the other 18, you know, these simple ways of using our language in an analogous, you know, or metaphorical form breaks down. So you're going to need some... You know, there's obviously some sort of a pairing here, some sort of a differential that has a potential that's going to be actualized someday. But to simplify it with a word like male and female would probably do a great disservice.
Yeah, I agree.
Right.
Maybe the next level doesn't have gender as we understand it, but just differential.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't even have personality and pattern as we currently understand it. You know, there's an absonite blending of those two. One of the triunities is about bestowing that conjoint power personality pattern together, and they'll refer to beings, instead of being personalized, they'll call them being absonitized when they talk about where they really have both what you call energy pattern and spirit pattern together, so that the word personality really doesn't make sense anymore. So all this stuff, you know, remember they say, when you technically, if you're going to talk about an absonite being, you really shouldn't use the word personality. You should at least say super personality or something like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah. All right. Let's get to the last little bit here. Oh, whoa, no, it's right. I'm holding this page for a reason. I just want, yeah, it says, and their number is beyond the concept of your circumscribed minds. About the Hapona natives, yeah.
Did we get a sense of a ratio of trinitized candidates versus the total? Fractions.
Boy, I don't know. Yeah, I'm not sure.
But it's enough to absorb all the solitary.
Yeah, right. I mean, yeah. I mean, the only sense I'm immediately remembering is small fraction, you know? You know, but a very, very tiny fraction, and, you know, with a number that's beyond my concept, you know, becomes a really huge number. Yeah. Yeah.
This transaction, together with many similar occurrences in universe administration, unmistakably indicates that the personnel of the grand universe, even that of Havona and Paradise, is undergoing a definite and certain reorganization in coordination with and with reference to the vast energy evolutions now taking place throughout the realms of outer space. We incline to the belief that the eternal future will witness phenomena of universe evolution which will far transcend all that the eternal past has experienced, and we anticipate such tremendous adventures, even as you should, with keen relish and ever-heightening expectation. Presented by a Divine Counselor from Uversa.
Even as you should. You know, don't let that pass. It's their last sentence, their bottom line. Bring this paper down into you. Make it transform the way you think about yourself and the way you live your life. Put yourself in this big context. It's all these trivial little things that you want to flare up animal-like about. Don't happen anymore. All right? Put things in perspective. Just one other little thing. We've talked quite a bit about that there's the Havona of before the super universe level is very different than the Havona of today, and the Havona of the next universe age will be very different than it is now. Don't forget about paradise, too. I mean, now, obviously, some facts of paradise change not. Okay? but when you're talking about a paradise citizen, especially the ones that they refer to, this is a being that I could mate with, quote unquote, potentially. Okay, so, they have a definitive finiteness to them, despite the fact that they are a paradise citizen. You know, don't forget that paradise, is a domain that can, upon which all beings can stand, from the lowest to the highest. Universal Father can stand on it, and so can you. And so there's a whole lower tier of beings there, and that are obviously going to be subject to change as things change. And then there'll be those that are higher that are subject to less change, until finally there's those that are subject to no change. Yeah. So that's an idea about paradise that's pretty foreign to anyone's imagination. To make paradise something that doesn't just have some, changeless God factor, whatever, on it, but to make it a place where, there's dwellings and all kinds of elbow rubbing and whatnot going on. And, it's a bustling domain, high and low. Yeah. So that's another, thing that they're just putting in there in passing. But it's at the end here. It's a bottom line thing they want you to carry away, to see that when all is said and done, there's only one thing that's motionless, and that's the aisle itself. Every other thing is moving, and it's going to be different at some point than it is now. So, any thought you have of dotting the last I's and crossing the last T's, in your flower garden or whatever, and okay, now you're done, and nothing left but harp playing now. I mean, that's just not, it's not the way the universe is, okay? And you need to challenge yourself to not, think that somehow you can pin it down and, wrap a nice little bow around it. Even things on paradise have to adapt to changes. They get all settled after an eternity of relationship with something, and then God changes it on them, okay? So you can probably handle getting all settled in, 5 years of something being the same and then having to adapt to a change in it. Yeah, that's the lesson between the lines. Be open to things changing. It's okay. The earth can change. It's okay. Yeah, your life can change. It's okay. You don't have to eternalize the present state of the earth. You don't have to eternalize the present state of your life. You can liberate yourself. Go with the flow. All right, let's take a moment here.